This is the April 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois, Mike Zuzula at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and Cheyenne Dunham of Northern Country Co-op out of Stacyville, Iowa. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find it and listen to it online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Of course, yesterday, the United States Department of Agriculture, on Wednesday of this week, released both the grain stocks for March 1 and the prospective plantings report. We'll talk about those in a moment, but I would like Cheyenne Dunham of Northern Country Co-op to introduce herself just a bit. She's from Stacyville, Iowa. I take it there are 12 elevators in the co-op, but only two in Iowa. Tell me where Stacyville is and a little bit about the cooperative and yourself, please.
Sure. So it's kind of up in that northeast corner of the state. Like you said, we do a lot of business across the state line over in Minnesota. Originally, it was founded back in 1908, so it's been around for a while. I've actually just been with them a few months now, but I've been up in Iowa the last four and a half years, doing grain and origination and merchandising.
And I saw that you were a graduate from Missouri and worked with the folks at FAPRI. When did you graduate and what did you do with FAPRI?
Yeah, sure. So I did my undergrad at Truman State. I finished that up in 2014, and then I went to Mizzou for agriculture economics. So I spent a couple years up there, and I did a research assistantship with FAPRI, and I did a lot of economic modeling. So with them, you know, they kind of had corn and soybeans pegged down, so I actually helped them with some fruit and vegetable projections, and we kind of incorporated that into some farm income numbers. So obviously they work closely with USDA information and got used to reading a lot of WASD reports and stuff before I made it up to Iowa. So it's a good program. I mean, they do a lot, and I got to learn a lot of the technical stuff before I went and did the hands-on stuff up here in Iowa.
And for those who are regular listeners, they will know that Ben Brown, who has just joined FAPRI from The Ohio State University, is with us once a month, usually on Mondays, from the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. He's University of Missouri Extension. And Seth Meyer, who is now the chief economist at the United States Department of Agriculture, also came out of FAPRI for a short time and then went back to Washington, D.C. Seth actually signed the documents yesterday released by the United States Department of Agriculture because Secretary Vilsack was not in the office at the time, though he did have some comments about the report, and said that it was a bit of a surprise, Mike Zuzulo. That may have been an understatement, especially as it relates to the prospective plantings report, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that the trade was expecting this. We had just made a new contract high in the Nov bean dease corn ratio of, I think, 2.66, Todd. And so the trade, I think most of the month of March had been toggling back and forth, playing that spread. But right before that report came out, most of the traders, it looked like to me, based upon the charts, and also because of some of the pricing of the options, seemed like they were really going hard after the long side of the beans or covering their shorts before the beans report came out and that acreage number came out, which if you were covering your short, that just ended up being correct just by default because of the limit up move.
Yeah. So, by the way, congratulations for being from the number five corn producing state in the nation. They always list the top five, at least in the executive summary, in Kansas. Now, number five for corn production across the United States. I was looking at some of the other numbers, Chip Nellinger, in that particular report, and it surprised me to find that of principal crop acres, Illinois, Iowa, and North Dakota, believe it or not, are up on the top of that list. In any of those three states, what did you see that you found of most interest?
Well, I think as the market expected, we saw some big acreage increases in the Dakotas, particularly North Dakota. You have to, when you add those principal acres up and compare them to past years, it is easy to scratch your head and wonder where are 2.2 to 2.7 million acres at. And I can't help but wonder if on the June report we won't find some of those back, but the market's going to use this number as its initial starting point in trying to project where, you know, specific yields will land us on carryout numbers. And so, I think there were big increases in the Dakotas, particularly North Dakota. I think that was expected. Probably likely could have been a little bit bigger in my mind. So maybe that's where we find some of these acres back. I think the big prevent plant acres of the last 2 years really kind of continues to mess things up a little bit in these projections.
And Matt Bennett, have you been thinking about what these numbers mean going forward, and really whether USDA might find in the June report larger corn or soybean acres? And as a reminder, corn acres at 91.144. USDA had that at 92 in the Ag Forum, and the soybean number at 87.6. That number is low as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of things. First of all, one thing that I noticed, from your question, Chip, there just a minute ago, for me anyway, is that bean acres are up in Illinois and Iowa. Corn acres are up in the Dakotas. So if what the USDA told us on the intentions comes to pass, then to me, not only have you limited your corn acreage, but you've limited your corn acreage in your big yielding states. And so that's something to keep very close, pay very close attention to. Yes, the beans are up, so maybe the national yield on beans could be pretty interesting this year on the high side, whereas corn could struggle, which wouldn't be a good thing whenever acreage is where it's at. But what does this mean, to answer your question to me? I guess the things that are, to me, I agree with Chip, most likely, especially given the prices that we're seeing, it was really hard for me to think that we're not going to go up in acreage there in June. You know, obviously some of your other crops, whether it's milo, sorghum, cotton down south, several of these crops have been trying to vie for acres, and they certainly did their job. But moving forward, if you have any wheat anywhere in the Western Corn Belt, and it doesn't look fantastic to me, it's probably going to go to the wayside and you're going to plant corn there. But what does it mean in the grand scheme of things? My personal opinion, Todd, is that when you get closer to that planted acreage report, if we don't have a weather issue, I think a person better, darn sure better, have their position quantified, worst case scenarios quantified, because I could see a spring high this year potentially. I think you're going to see a lot of excitement into that May report. You get on past that, if you don't have a weather issue, the high could possibly be in.
Shan, what did you think of the numbers as they were presented for the states of Iowa and Minnesota? Minnesota, no change in corn, but they were higher for soybeans.
Right, yeah, they bumped up another 400,000 there, so it looks like they're sitting about 7.8. So I guess that's not really too much of a surprise. And then Iowa, it's pretty common for them to go back and forth on corn and beans, but Iowa farmers, they like to grow their corn, they like to store their corn, and, with these prices, you can't really go wrong with planting either of them. So I think it may be a little bit surprising that, we just saw that little bit of a shift there, but, when it actually goes in the ground, and depending on whether this spring planting, that could have a play into it too, as far as what we're going to see actually get planted.
Did farmers yesterday take advantage of the move up to market any new crop?
We did see some going. Yep. We saw a lot of people had offers in, and we always tell them, hang them high on days like that and maybe they'll hit. And, obviously with everything limiting up like it did, we did see some new crop move, which it's been slow here for a while. I think everyone was pretty bulled up, ready to ride it out. But I think a lot of people took advantage of that high, and based on, how things move today, that was probably not the worst decision.
Hey, Mike Zuzalo, do you have the weekly changes for the week, and what do the technicals look like?
Well, I don't have the numbers on the specifics on the net for the week, but the thing that I was watching most, Todd, and I think this is where the short term comes into play quite a bit, is that the gaps in the charts to the downside after the report. And we did fill the gap in the November beans at 1256 and a quarter, but December corn continues to hold a gap at about 477 and a half. I think three things hit us in the short term, primarily the gaps, other than the gaps, I should say, the export sales, the three-day holiday, and I think the weak corn spread. And I think that weaker spread action that we saw in the aftermath of the report was one due to the stocks not being anything to write home about, neither negative nor positive, versus the acreage. And so it shows you the trade was probably out of position, being too long in the front end. I think the second reason the weaker spreads were going on is because this, and it kind of picks up on what Matt was talking about a minute ago, this rally so far has been almost all supply led. I don't care whether you're talking about monetary supply, the crude oil rally, or the grain market rally. It's almost been all supply led, not so much demand led here in the last 3 to 4 months. And it's very hard to sell on the way down in these supply led markets, because once they break, you don't know if it's the break that's never going to bring the market back around. So I think as you come back from the holiday and you dress up the charts, and I think your weekly closes are important. I'm not trying to minimize those, but I think it's more important now that we just closed out a quarter and closed out a month, that we come back next week after a three-day holiday and get the wheat back on it, because we really need the wheat to support this market. Otherwise, I think these are rallies to sell.
I guess that does say something about the marketplace, Chip, and I'm wondering how cautious producers need to be.
Yeah, well, I think two things. If anyone pretends they could have predicted these lowball acreage numbers or the reaction on Thursday, they're just bald-faced lying to you. I agree with Mike, and to a certain extent, what Matt said earlier. You cannot lead us higher with bear spreads working. So if this thing's going to keep going, it's going to be led by the front end, in my opinion, even though the acreage number, both corn and beans were, way on the low side of expectations, and it's wildly bullish for new crop. You can't get there led by the new crop. If we're going to continue higher, it's got to be led by the old crop. If the spreads aren't going to work, then that might be the market saying, we don't believe the big demand numbers that the USDA has projected. We think China might be done with their buying. And if that's the case, then we've got some problems out there. So I agree with Mike. I think we need to get into early next week, the first official week of a new quarter, first full week anyway, of a new quarter, post-holiday, post-long weekend. If these markets don't stabilize and start seeing some strength in the front end of the market, this market may have some problems. And it's a head-scratcher because, as you plug those acreage numbers in and plug some pretty robust demand numbers in, you can make a real strong case that we're virtually out of beans for a new crop perspective. But yet, if we don't get this market stabilized and the spreads stabilized and the front end of the market rallying again, this market may have some problems for at least the foreseeable future, unless there's a weather scare come June, July.
Cheyenne, that brings us to next week's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Report. It's due out on Friday the 9th. It will not include anything from the prospective plantings report, because those numbers don't get incorporated until the new crop figures are released, and that won't be until the month of May. However, the grain stocks numbers will indicate to some respect what USDA WASD might do with the demand functions and how that would lay out in the supply and demand features of that report. Any changes you're expecting from the grain stocks to be rolled in? Because those numbers were not very far off what the trade was thinking.
Right. I don't think we're anticipating any major surprises on that. I think we all kind of had this build up around this last report that came out on Wednesday. And I think, we're probably just going to be sitting tight here for a little bit, at least, from my perspective on it.
How important are these numbers next week in your mind, Matt?
Well, I actually think they're fairly important. Here's the thing that I think about this April supply and demand. The exports are going to have to go up on corn. I know that's a statement you don't want to make as a market analyst, but we really need to see some sort of an upward movement in those exports for corn. They've got all the ammunition in the world to see that happen. Yes, you could roll some of those sales into a new crop, but by all means, the indications were that those were going to be April delivery, you know, April and May. I think you're going to see a ton of disappearance in this next quarter. And I expect to see a carry out instead of a 1502, something more along the lines of a 1.3 or a 1.35. And then I think you're setting the table for this May S&D to be quite interesting because you're going to be lowering the carry out, thus the carry in for your next year. And then you're going to have to use 91.1. And just like Chip said on soybeans, you're painting the picture for an extremely tight situation. You're doing so for both old and new whenever it comes to soybeans and on corn to a lesser extent, but still extremely tight situation. So I do think that this is going to be very closely watched. If the USDA makes the necessary changes, I don't think you'll see any grandiose market move, but I think that if they don't, it's going to be befuddling to the market, and it's going to be maybe just more chop action, and we're going to be paying very close attention to what the weather does, because I do think there's going to be a lot of planters rolling in the next several days.
How important will planting pace and any delays here in the United States be going forward?
Well, I think what you do is you start to say, you know what, okay, they printed 91.1, but when you have an early spring, when you have a good spring, most of your forecasts right now are that we're going to have a pretty decent spring. Then you start having the discussion, well, corn acres are likely to go up. Well, how much are they going to go up? And so I'm like, Chip, I could probably find a couple million acres of corn, I think, fairly handily, especially with a really good spring. Now, fertilizer prices are sky high. We know that they're a lot higher than what they were last fall, but still, you look up at the board and you look at 493 as a high here to close the week. You know, I know that that's not where we close, but producers see that $5 dancing in their head, and I do think that you're going to see a fair amount of these corn acres come to the market if the weather stays good. So weather is extremely important, and I think it's going to provide some headwinds moving forward.
Mike, I'll turn back to you because it's been mentioned a couple of times over the last day and a half that there is a potential for wheat, especially out of Kansas, I suppose, that may or may not look very good, Oklahoma as well, to be torn up and possibly to go into another crop. However, I'm wondering about the sorghum acres, which were big, and I'm also wondering about cotton in the South. I think most of that's out of Texas, and it looked like it was pretty good sized as well. So where do acres come from, if they come?
Yeah, I'm not going to challenge anything that the other guys have said, but I will say that it was hard for me to get above or get to 92 million acres on corn. And I think Chip's right about, you know, it was hard for me to see both small corn and small bean acres. You have to rob Peter to pay Paul when you do your estimates. And so I think he's right there. It's hard for anybody to have guessed what the USDA was going to do, but corn acres were hard for me to see to go above 92 for a variety of reasons. And I talked to clients and subscribers about that. They were the ones that actually kind of put that on to me. And I think Iowa's derecho last year really created an environment where maybe seed corn availability and the best stack of varieties was a little bit harder to find than normal. Crop insurance prices, you and I talked about this last week. I think so, integrating your question with what I just said, I don't think there's a lot of room to maneuver. I think there is some wheat acres, as Matt said, that can go into corn and beans. I think it'd be an oil seed like canola, or it would be sorghum, more sorghum acres if they have rough wheat. I just don't see it's going to go into corn because you're not going to be able to really insure that. And corn is very hard to plant if it's dry land, if you've already got something on it out here. So I'm inclined to think it's going to be an oil seed or sorghum. But that, to kind of back up on your April WASDE report, I think there's one major massive issue that can flip these spreads back to a bull spread, and that is the South American crop. We've got to understand what that crop is, because as far as I can see it, and from what I am hearing down south, that 134 Brazil production number is kind of baked into the cake in the Chicago Board of Trade mindset, but it is not baked into the yields from what I'm getting. And so between Argentina and Brazil, I still think there's a massive question mark. I am hoping that in 10 days, or 5 days or whatever it is, we will know, because we're only two reports away from May 15th when the corn will be planted without any weather events, and we'll have a stand and we'll have a pretty good idea of what that stand looks like.
The The other item, and we haven't talked about this much, Cheyenne, and I don't know whether you will have much of a view on this, but the Biden administration, in the announcements it made yesterday, in its stance on China in particular, has been holding the line very much with the Trump administration, in a slightly different form, but still looking to challenge the competition that has been coming from China. How much of a problem might that be for the year? And I suppose that relates back to what the demand will look like from that country and whether they can get enough soybeans to feed all the animals that may or may not be on the hoof there.
Right. And I guess, you know, that's a part of it to consider, too, is, you know, we've seen that demand from China rebound so much this last year compared to the last several years. You know, our prices were really struggling there for a while. And, you know, their supply of, you know, hog production with ASF and everything. And I think, you know, the government numbers versus what's probably actually happening there with those supplies, you know, is a little uncertain at this time. So it's always a concern that we could slip back into that, right? I think, you know, we've been fortunate. We've had the opportunity to lock in some good prices. We've seen that strong demand. Again, is it sustainable with these acre numbers? You know, that's maybe a different deal, but there's just a lot to factor in here. I think, you know, we've got different options for these corn and soybeans to go if they don't go to that China demand, you know, and I think we're going to have other administration related developments to keep an eye on as well, you know, whether it's with ethanol and the blending and everything like that, that we're also going to be considering as we move forward under this new administration.
I do want to follow up with you on the question about the ratio and the availability of seed. You've been in the area just to the north and west of Mason City, Iowa, for a few months now. Was there a discussion or has there been a discussion about the shorter supply of seed corn and coming from that particular area because of the derecho, which would have been to the south of you still, but that would have been certainly in the primary area where that wind blew through?
Right. So actually, just a little background there. I live on the northern edge of where that derecho went through. So I got to drive around, you know, that Perry and Des Moines area and everything and see the fields after that happened. But I haven't heard anything as far as, you know, seed availability and everything. It was really impressive, you know, despite all of that down grain that we saw, how much of that was able to be harvested, you know, combines going out and harvesting the down corn and, you know, yields were good. You know, damage wasn't bad. And I think it surprised everybody considering how bad it looked, you know, from the roadside, basically.
Chip, what'd you make of the grain stocks report yesterday?
Yeah, well, surprisingly, I think, you know, Mike mentioned this earlier, pretty benign. I mean, all really within close to the expectations. I had it totally backwards. I thought the market had baked in, you know, pretty high corn numbers and, you know, maybe right around 90 million bean acres, and that the real fireworks would come from the stocks and that the stocks would be bullish. But the stocks were just, you know, it was the exact opposite. The market did a really good job of predicting and, you know, average estimate was, you know, not far off of what the USDA said. And the fireworks all came from the acreage side. So, you know, I think there's a big disconnect here in a lot of things. I mean, hit on by, you know, some people earlier. In the wheat, you know, how can we go multiple days with, you know, record low temperatures? And the market seems to have forgotten about that and pretending like there was no damage. Demand, you know, what are they going to do on this upcoming supply and demand report? We've got ethanol cranking. We've got, you know, corn exports really strong. We're still selling beans and we're already, you know, essentially at 100% of the estimate. And so there's some, you know, really weird things that are happening right here. And I'm not saying we're going to get all the answers out of this upcoming, you know, April WASDE report, but there's a lot of questions the market still has. The stocks number, to answer your question in a roundabout way, I thought was just, you know, pretty muted. And I don't think that it calls for any large changes on this upcoming April report. And it's still going to come down to how we finish out the marketing year on demand. And, you know, a lot of these other issues, and Mike hit on it earlier, what's that South American crop? my brain tells me that as dry as they were through their whole growing season, to have a record crop by far just doesn't make sense to me. Yet all we see from the USDA and private estimates are this 134, 135 million metric ton crop in Brazil. So there's just a lot of questions out there that don't make a lot of sense right now in a lot of different areas that the market's going to be hanging on to get some more definitive information.
Of course, Matt, USDA has a pretty healthy ethanol usage figure built into the WASDE already. It also has a pretty large feed usage number, feed and residual. However, the Hogs and Pigs report last week suggested that the numbers aren't going to be as big as some had thought they would be. Will that make a difference to the USDA?
Well, it's certainly a place that they can go, you know, but I got to think that feed and residual will probably not be touched. Maybe it would be a shade. I think that there's other adjustments you can make. I mean, you know, I think it's very similar to what Chip said. I mean, I was completely backwards on this report. I thought that it was going to be a friendly stocks report. Now, I think whenever you stop and think about it, last year we were pushing $8 billion at this time, and this year, you know, you're down at 7.7. Now, you look at soybeans, I mean, just wildly below where we were a year ago. So if you look at us year on year, there's no question things are very tight. But, you know, to answer your question, feed and residual usage, I don't know that it's going to be affected much, but if it is, it should be more than offset by this export situation. I certainly think that they've got everything they need to take at least 150 million bushels and tack it on to exports. Inspections have been running way better than what we were for quite some time. And now, as far as the pace is concerned, there's no reason that the USDA wouldn't adjust. So sales and inspections for both corn and beans would suggest adjustments need to be made to the high side, which would obviously lower your carryout levels. But I don't know exactly what will happen and what will take place. I'm like Chip, I'm just a little bit confused with a whole lot of different things. But at this stage of the game, we've got a lot of really good stuff that's going on. The producer has to pay close attention, though, because there's no guarantees that this is all going to stay around forever.
Let's get some final thoughts from each of you. I think Matt Bennett will stay with you for the moment. What's your final thought for this edition of Commodity Week?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm excited about 2021. There's so many opportunities to heal up for producers, and I think that there's great opportunities moving forward. I want to stay quite flexible in my marketing plan, but at the same time, I got to quantify some worst-case scenarios when I can do so at more profitable levels than I've seen in years. So, yeah, I'm excited about this year. I just want to make sure that we're proactive and, you know, we're smart about what we do.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, your final thought for the day?
Yeah, I'd second what Matt said as well, but a lot of bullishness built in here. Funds have a massive long position built up in the corn market. These reports from an acreage standpoint would make the carryout and the balance sheet for 2021 extremely tight. I don't want to get too bulled up. We got to focus on profitability. There's marketing tools out there to allow for locking in margins and having some upside, whether that's minimum price contracts or puts. I really want to, kind of look at those, especially on strength from here. And we don't know what the other shoe is. It's a wildly volatile financial world. It's a wildly volatile political arena in the world right now. And China's a big unknown. Will they continue with their massive demand or not? That could be the difference of, 60, 80 cents in corn and a buck and a half or $2 in beans. So we got to focus on profitability, lock it in when it's there, and remain with some upside flexibility in case we run into a weather scare this summer.
Mike Zuzulo?
I think all the rest of the group here has it right on the money as usual, Todd. When you look at this market, if it's supply driven, we don't know the weather. We don't know China's demand. I think it's really prudent to think about gross revenue per acre. I still like the sell and defend model, even after the grain stocks report. And I think what the spreads will dictate here in the next couple of weeks will tell us a lot.
And finally, Cheyenne Dunham, your thoughts.
Well, we've seen a lot more new crop grain locked in earlier this year than we haven't seen than we've seen in some recent years, and I think that was followed by some seller's remorse when the market kept going up. But a lot of people have talked about, you know, we've got China's demand and South American production to factor into what's going to happen to the prices the next few months. So I think the thing I would point out is that I think it's important to remember there's a difference between selling on a down day in the market and selling at a level that isn't profitable for an operation. So I think staying on track with the marketing plan is going to be really important as we move forward this spring.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Matt Bennett at agmarket.net, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Mike Zuzlow of globalcomresearch.com, and Cheyenne Dunham of Northern Country Co-op. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.